Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. I am joined tonight by two of my favorite people in the duck hunting world, Mr. Justin Harrison and Josh Raggio. Guys, how are you?
Good, Rocky.
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Justin's real good. He just got done with karate.
I wish you would stop with that crap, Josh. It's jiu-jitsu, and yes, I got strangled a couple of times. Rear naked choke for all the ladies out there.
Is the name of your dojo, is it Cobra Kai?
No, I wish it was, but it's not. It's not. Quick plug, Gracie South, come see us. All right, done.
Is Johnny the teacher?
No. It's nothing like that. It's real stuff, all right?
Sweep the leg, Johnny.
Yeah.
All right, Justin, I got to ask you this. How is Frank? Since his return back home, you did find him. He's back home. How is he?
Reward was paid. Frank is currently suffering from some traumatic issues. But otherwise, we don't turn the lights out on Frank. It's something about mud. He actually was in Crossgate WMA. Sunk in the mud, but he's on the mend. He's sitting in front of me right now. I wish we were live streaming, from Facebook. I'd show you Frank. He's doing good. Doing good.
I've got to ask this real quick. Has the hate mail stopped or has it increased more?
You know, it was fine when everything was on the normal MS Ducks. Is it Ducks out? Or MS Ducks?
Boy.
When it
won't let me live it down, will you?
Yeah, I won't. When it was on the MS Ducks page, it was fine. And then it got accidentally transposed over to another page, and some ants came out of the woodwork, and it was, kind of weird, the hate mail that you can get over trying to be funny. And what people don't understand is I sat there and watched a dog. I held on to a dog for 6 months too long. And sat there with a dog cradled in my arms, telling him bye. So I get the heartfelt stuff. I'm not heartless, but at the same time, there has to be a little black humor when you're discussing stuff like that, and particularly the post that were coming up. It's just like, I don't really see that being an actual thing.
I don't want to go there tonight.
Don't, and we're not, going to do it. But anyway, the post was meant kind of for humor, maybe poor taste, admittedly. But yeah, they came out of the woodwork after that. So,
well, I think
it's calmed down. It's calmed down since then.
I think the one that you made better than that. And Raggio can relate to this one, is the one about the 3D pictures from Ramsey Russell. Double R has gone off the deep end when it comes to the 3D pictures.
Look, man, I'll be honest with you, and I hope Raggio can wheel back me up on this, but I literally scrolled through that on my Facebook feed and thought, it was like 9 in the morning, and I was throwing a leg off the bed and hitting the floor, trying to make the whole world stop spinning. I thought I was drunk.
I can't say that I was I was fortunate to be, I think, on the very front end of Ramsey figuring out 3D pictures on our opening day hunt in Arkansas. I'm pretty sure he had figured out the 3D thing the night before. And so I got the whole Ramsey Russell excitement of this new technology that he had discovered.
Let me guess how the conversation went, Josh. Can I do it real quick? Oh, man, Josh, Raggio, you got to understand, man. It's 3D, brother. It's 3D. Right. You put it down, man. It scrolls across. Pick moves. Does that sound something like what he had to offer?
It might have gone a little something like that, but it was, really? Hey, I'll be honest. I guess I had not seen it, and he did a picture of a call, and I thought, man, that's pretty cool. Show me how to do it, Ramsey. And my phone is too old. I can't even do 3D pictures, so I'm out. I had to just watch what Ramsey was doing.
It gave me a headache. I kept looking at that deer picture the other day, and it literally gave me a headache, and I thought I was being transported to Hogwarts for a little bit.
That was probably after you were in one of those chokeholds you were just talking about.
Yeah. True, or a drink, one or two. This is true. So I love Ramsey Russell's death. He's a great human, but please stop those types of pictures.
Ramsey will be back with it. I know you're listening. Keep doing it, just because Justin doesn't like it. Please.
Tag him in
every one of them.
He hadn't listened to me in 15 years. He's not going to start today. So, yeah, I mean, every picture he posts will be one of those dang Harry Potter pics.
I'm in full agreement with Raggio on that one. Ramsey, at Justin Harrison with every one of them.
Every time. And actually, just go ahead and double the amount that you're doing and be sure to tag him.
Man, y'all suck. Honestly, but that's cool.
All right, speaking of authentic posts, it's time to get just a little bit serious. Raggio with the post of the year, because there's nobody else on this podcast going to argue with us. When it comes to Mr. Raggio, Mr. Ronnie, that's Josh's dad, for those of you that don't know him, the finest man outside of my own dad to walk the face of the earth.
Absolutely.
What a post. If you don't follow Josh, geez, and you don't know the kind of the, can you give us just where the people that are listening, just a little backstory, you know, to what's been going on with your dad the past couple of years, Josh?
Yeah. So he was, he had gotten sick. And when I say sick, just not feeling himself, a few years ago. He ended up having an aortic dissection, which is not good in most cases. Has a surgery, lives through that, and instead of getting better, he starts progressively getting worse. And our family doctor, she's awesome. She's one of those that she's going to go home from work and just keep researching, trying to figure out what's wrong with him. And through a series of, a long series of tests and different things, you know, they essentially figure out that something's going on with his liver. And it was a genetic disease called alpha-1 antitrypsin, which was essentially eating his liver. It's called cirrhosis. And if you don't know, your liver and the enzymes, it controls your whole body essentially and how you feel. And he had gotten to the point where, about a year, I'd say 14 months ago, he was in a wheelchair. He was basically homebound. We were trying to help him, from the couch to the bathroom. He really couldn't talk. He was down to about a whisper. It wasn't good by any stretch of the imagination. And, once we figure out what's going on, we obviously are going to different hospitals across the country, seeing these specialists, and it's determined that he needs a transplant and if he's going to live. And, we go to Ochsner's, and they don't want to operate on him because he was, high risk. We can just tell, by the way, they're, one of the top transplant hospitals in the country. That's why we were there. Went to a few others and ended up, getting on the list at UMC. And, December 31st last year, almost a year ago, we got the phone call that, that he was, his name had come up and there was a donor, he had a transplant, January 1st of 2018. And so, a transplant's a big deal. It's not something that, it's a huge deal. And his was even bigger because they did what's called a split liver, where it was actually, they took part of the liver and gave it to another recipient, and he got part of the liver, and it worked for both recipients. And so we go, we go through that recovery process, and I think I said in the post, and I've made a couple of posts about it, but a year ago today, I'm helping my dad, from the couch to the bed, and now we're actually hunting. He's standing in, next to a tree and water, and he's blowing a duck call. And we're talking about a guy that couldn't even talk. He could barely whisper a year ago. And so, to go from that point to where we're at, currently today, it was special. We got to hunt with Dr. Earl. Mark was, when he got the phone call that there was a donor, and he was actually duck hunting at the same place where he took us, on New Year's Day. So, one year anniversary was hunting with a transplant surgeon at the same place that, when he received the phone call. So we've come a very long way in 12 months. It's an amazing journey.
I will say this. Let me paint my picture of it. Let me try to get this out. So 2 years ago, I was judging the state duck calling contest with Josh, and I saw Mr. Raggio going into the duck calling contest 2 years ago, and he was in a wheelchair, in awful shape. Because I'd just seen him probably 6 months prior to that at one of your call nights, and I'd say he was fine by any means, but he was up and around. And And I remember asking you at the duck calling, state calling championship, you said, it's not good. And a year later, I'm judging the same contest with you again. And the first person that I run into going into the calling contest was your dad. Healthy as a horse. His back was to me. I'll never forget this because I spent a lot of time praying for your dad. And when I was walking up, his back was to me, and he turned around. And one thing I'll never be accused of in my life is being a hugging person. I'm a high five, pull it in, that kind of guy. But a hugger, nah, I'll never be accused of a hugger. But when I saw your dad's face, man, it almost lost my balance. And, man, I just walked straight up to him and just hugged him like he was my mama or something. I was just overwhelmed to see how good he was doing and just to see the miracle that he is. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a miracle. And the thing is he has, you know, had and has such a strong influence on that duck call competition, you know, world and scene. I mean, you know, he competed for basically as long as I can remember. I mean, obviously he got me into it. And the funny thing about my dad was he never blew in the worlds. I think he got second in the state 5 years in a row, to various, you know, guys that have won it. But, you know, oftentimes in a calling contest, you know, there's one guy that leaves happy and it's the guy that wins. And everybody else is, you know, a lot of things go on. But my dad was not that guy. He was always very encouraging. He was always very encouraging to young guys that were trying to get in it. He would help them. I remember guys coming to our house, you know, when I was in high school and college, you know, and him working with them. And I mean, he was that guy that was just very, very encouraging. And I mean, and he built, and it was genuine. That was the thing. It was very, very genuine. Everything he does is very genuine. And so he, you know, there was a level of respect that he earned in that whole scene. And then, you know, he never accomplished his goal of blowing in the worlds, but you know, he accepted it was what it was, you know, and when it came time to, whoever, I can't remember who was directing while he was blowing out, you know, competing, you know, when it came time for that person to step down, you know, he stepped into that role and was even more respected then because, you know, as a director of a contest, you're in charge of, you know, judging and making sure it's run correctly and all this type of stuff. And I mean, there's a lot that goes into a duck calling contest that people don't realize. And he did it right. And, you know, and so he's just so well respected in that little niche of duck calling and just his influence, you know, it was immense. I mean, he's just that guy, that positive guy that's always, you know, thinking the good and not the bad in everybody. I mean, he just gives everybody the benefit of the doubt. And that's why people are, you know, attracted to him and want to be around him and listen to what he has to say.
Justin, you actually met Mr. Raggio before you met Josh, right?
I'm sorry. I was listening to Josh talk. Yeah, I did. Are we ready to do that? I'm sitting here thinking about how awesome what Josh just talked about is. But I did. Through the old website, MS Ducks. I had lost my. I was training Gage at the time, and
hey, Justin, let me say this for those of you that have not listened to that podcast with Justin back here in the spring, which is very few of you because it's one of the most downloaded episodes that we've done. if you go back somewhere around March, April, Justin was on here and he told the story. I think it's a better story than the Tony Vandermore Tank story. I think it was Tank.
Yeah.
Tony's dog.
Yep.
It's equally as good. So we go back.
And Tony, that story on. Don't watch it when you feel emotional. So.
But you can go back. It's back in the spring of last year. It was March or April. Justin was on here, and they told the story of Gage. But go ahead.
Well, I had a couple hundred acres of really, really good training grounds in my camp, like inside the city limits of Brandon, which is the way Brandon is growing is unheard of. And I had it for a year or two.
bunch of ponds, big fields, rolling fields, and we were training like daily. And I was on a 7-on, 7-off type deal. And the owner of the property, who lived on the property, when I was pulling in one day, he said, "Justin, man, I hate to tell you, but I sold the place." And I couldn't feel bad for him when he told me what he got an acre. You know, I mean, it is what it is. And at the same time, I posted on MS Ducks, I've lost my place of training in Brandon. I'm looking for somewhere to train. And the chief ER resident at the hospital at UNC, which is where Mr. Ronnie had his transplant, sent me a private message, and he said, he said something like, I don't remember how the messages went. There was several of them, you can imagine, but his dog Moose, who Mr. Bill Autry had trained forever, was with him, and Moose needed to pass a double master at Nashville to qualify for the Master National. And he asked me if I would be willing to take Moose on. Moose housebroken, Moose lived in the house, Moose, you know, his chocolate dog. And I said, "Yeah, man." I mean, not knowing where this conversation was going, I just kind of said, I was in that mode of, I just want to train dogs, you know. And I said, "Sure. If I can get some ground," which was the stipulation, "I can get you ground if you can take Moose on." And I said, "Sure, you know, I'd be glad to do it." And I knew there, I had seen his post, and I knew he was, I knew he was a hunter. And I knew that whatever dog I got, even, I know Mr. Bill Autry is a legend. Let's, you know, he is a legend in HRC and AKC for that matter, UKC and AKC for that matter. And I said, "Sure." Within 30 minutes, Zara called me back and said, "I got you some ground." And it was, Josh, and I don't know how much acreage y'all have, and that doesn't even really matter. It doesn't matter if it was an acre. He said, "Man, I've got you some ground." I called Mr. Ronnie Raggio, and I told him the situation, and Mr. Ronnie said, you have an open gate. And I was floored, because you just don't, even back in 05, I think it was, 06, something like that, you didn't have people that were opening their place up to you, the dog train, because a lot of people didn't understand it, you know. And Josh and I met in the byway of the whole thing, and I took Moose on. And Moose, I did not train Moose. I had no part of Moose's training. I realized that like on day one. Moose was autopilot, and Josh will tell you, he's watched that dog way more than I have. I just had to say, you know, Moose for a mark, back for a blind. And Moose was figuring it out. And me and Moose and Gage spent, I don't know, 3 months together, 4 months together, getting ready for that thing. And, or maybe not even that long. I can't remember now. But Moose passed two of them, but the double master, Moose passed them both, and that was Gage's first master pass. He didn't pass them both. He was a wild child. I mean, he, you know, there's stories out there about Gage and rodeos and everything, black dog rodeos, but he did make it through one of them, and that was his first experience in AKC. And so we came by, and I was thinking kind of, you know, the training ground would be over, and Mr. Ronnie never made it over. Mr. Ronnie accepted me sight unseen. When he heard duck hunting, duck dogs, duck, you know, training, that kind of thing, he opened it up. He said, "Man, I've got this land down here. If you're willing to come down here, come down here." And there's not many people left that'll do that. There's not, and so, and we'll get further into this story, I feel like, as the podcast goes, but I'm forever in debt to the Raggios. Forever. Everything my dogs ever got, ever, and they got a lot, is directly a cause of becoming friends with the Raggios. Josh being the son. And one of my dearest friends. I should say that right now because that sounds kind of cold. There is nothing my dogs ever got that I can't point to Josh and go, they got those titles because you and your dad opened your place up to me.
You know what it goes back to me? What let me say this about Mr. Raggio. Mr. Raggio lives by the principle that Will Primos came over here and told months ago. You trust somebody until
you can't. I know what you're fixing to say, and you're exactly right.
You trust somebody until you can't. And that man has made me feel, listen, I hadn't been around him but 10 times, 15 times, and it's like we're best friends. That's just the kind of guy he is. And that's how we should all live, is to make others feel that way.
Yeah.
That they are something. And that's how he is. Don't mean to puff your family up, Josh, but that's just how he lives. Every day.
I learned a valuable lesson from the Raggios, the whole family. Because the whole family, when you go on a family land, the entire family has to be okay with it. And I learned a very, very valuable thing that I'll carry with me forever. I was a kid. I mean, yeah, I was in my mid to late 20s at the time, so nobody wants to call themselves a kid then, but I was a kid. I'm 42 now. He showed me, like, the ability. He wanted me to succeed. He wanted me part of the outdoors. He didn't want to shut those doors. And you think about it with in other aspects, or not even other aspects, you go to another door, they're going to tell you no. They're going to tell you go away. Mr. Ronnie.
9 times out of 10. Yep.
9 times out of 10, you're going to be turned down. And I was so nervous the first phone call I ever made to Mr. Ronnie. There gave me the phone number to call, and I called him right back after 30 minutes of festering over it and biting fingernails and like, God, do I really have to do this? I called him, and he was the kindest, most gentlest, understanding, son, come down here, train your dogs, and have fun. And I mean, he had rules, you know, if it's wet, don't get off the road. Well, who, you know, that was the kind of rules he set. And I would, man, I was so, and Josh could tell you, I hope, and maybe I'm wrong, but man, I thought of that place as my dad's place. And I did not want to mess it up. And if it was, had been raining, we didn't go down there. You know, we just didn't. And that's
we really only had two rules down there: is close the gate if you have to open one, because we sure don't want to go chase a bunch of cows. And
doggone
if we plant ryegrass, don't ride through it, please.
That's right.
It's pretty doggone much that simple.
You're doggone right. I remember those rules like it was yesterday. And I remember the phone, you know, on the phone. And I'm going to tell you what, I pick around with Josh a lot, but the ratios to me, and I told him, I mean, the guy, Josh, went way, Rocky, you know, you were there, out of his way to support what I do for a side job. It's a side job for me, but what I do, and they just did it because radios are kind people, and they want to see other people do well. And I think that's a true person. They want to see other people do as well as they do. You know?
I told Josh that night, man. Did I not pull you to the side and said, man, I appreciate you teaching me, bringing me back to a life lesson that I was taught years ago, and that's to be grateful for our friends. And
that's right.
And always be there to celebrate in their moments.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I told Josh, I told him that night, Justin, I pulled him to the side, I was telling him that. I said, man, thank you for reminding me of a foundational principle that I was taught years ago that I've just gotten so busy that I've kind of forgotten it.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, for me, I mean, you know, we all have a lot of acquaintances, but, you know, I mean, I have, you know, just a very, very few handful of friends that live within really an hour. I mean, you know, Justin lives 45 minutes, Edward lives 45 minutes, but most of my other just really, you know, kind of my group, you know, my hunting group and all that, Brooks and Harrison, you know, I mean, they live, I mean, it's weird because everybody lives so far away from each other now. You know, you meet certain people in your life that you know, I mean, just good judge of character. They're true, genuine people, and there's no ulterior motives to, you know, what they do or what they're asking for or doing for you or whatever. I mean, it's just real. And that's my dad. I mean, he's just real. You know, it is what it is. And he told me today, you know, he said, hey, Edward was talking about wanting to go somewhere hunting, and he didn't have a boat. And he's like, hey, just, you know, tell him to come get mine. I mean, that's just the kind of guy he is. And, you know, I've been very fortunate to been raised by, you know, have a dad like that.
But we could sit here and talk about Mr. Ronnie all night long. All right. Because that's just how good of a guy he is. But you two, your paths crossed through Justin being out there training. And what I think is a very interesting part of the story was, all right, so somewhere around the same time, Justin, you're turning calls, right?
Yeah.
Couple years
after that. No. The calls came way after that.
But yeah, all right, so you two are building a friendship over these couple of years.
And
you start turning calls, and you call Josh up one night and said, hey, come over here, won't you check them out? How did that go?
Actually, all right, number one, I was turning terrible calls, but they looked true. I always say that they're horrible, but I still, the one I blow is a walnut call that it sounds horrible, and I still hunt with it. It's my call. I can't. It's the one call that I called that suited me. So, no, Josh, I don't think I don't think I called Josh. I think Josh and I, in our conversations, I think he was like, because let's face it, this dude, Josh, please shut your ears, because I don't want you to hear me compliment you this bad. But this guy is a world class duck caller. World class. If there's gonna be a bent, if there's gonna be a water mallard's bent into the timber, Josh is gonna bend them. And he had expressed interest in, you know, the whole process, and I was making terrible calls. And he came over one night. I don't know if I called him, come sit with me, watch this. I don't know. I have no idea how that went.
Do you remember, but, Josh?
Yeah. Rocky, I don't remember what I ate for breakfast this morning. But I mean,
well, all right, I'm gonna say this.
I was living in Brandon at the time.
Yep, that's right.
And so we were 5 miles from each other probably. I knew that obviously that he was making calls and making calls from scratch. Okay. Like taking a block of wood and making a duck call from a square block of wood, making duck calls. And I didn't really get it. Cause at the time I was blowing, Greg Hood's calls and competing with those. And for the most part, I just hadn't been around a true, like somebody taking a block of wood and turn it into something you could go hunt with and call ducks and kill ducks with. My interest was piqued because of the way he was doing it. And it was piqued because I knew how Justin was from training his own dog. I mean, he just does everything on his own way, but it's going to be the hardest way. And it's going to be from point A. He's not going to start at point C and progress. You know, he's going to start from scratch. And it really just piqued my interest. And so I don't remember how I ended up at his house that day for whatever reason, but you know, I'm seeing these calls and I'm blowing them and I'm totally just enamored that he just took a block of wood and turned it into something that's making a duck sound. And I was blowing through them and I guess kind of critiquing them I was blowing it and he was critiquing himself. But I left that day, or that night, I looked at 5 or 6 calls he had right there and blown through them. And I left because we had to walk through the garage and I saw all the sawdust and lathe. And I was like, man, that is the single coolest thing I've ever seen. It mentally became a bucket list thing for me at that point to one day make my own duck call to go hunt with. And because Justin hunts by himself for the most part. He ain't big on going to hunt with a bunch of guys. And he was going to take his dog that he trained, hunt with a decoy that he made, and walk into a public land hole and call ducks with a call that he made. And that just, the whole idea of that, like it was a respect thing, but it was also kind of a like, damn, he's just, this guy's got it figured out. You know, like we thought kind of the same way. But when I left that day, I thought one day I'm going to do that, you know? And that's when it all started for me, that the whole duck call thing was when I left, cause I was just so enamored by what he had just done. And so that was really when the whole making a duck call one day started for me.
Hey, I want to throw this in here. Justin, something else happened that day. Am I right? Listen, and now I want to say this. People heard me laughing when you said terrible duck calls. As much as we can brag on Ronnie Raggio and Josh Raggio, Justin Harrison is one of the most talented people in the world. So when he says terrible calls, I'm not laughing at him. I'm laughing at just the dumbest thing ever. Whatever. You can keep saying that all you want to, Justin.
I was actually waiting for Josh to finish with it, a little diatribe. I turned a block of wood into a shape of a duck call. I'm not kidding you, Rocky. This is how good this dude is at what he does. My duck calls sound horrible. They're horrible. Everybody that wanted to buy, all two people that wanted to buy a duck call from me back in the day, I was like, you realize this is going to be a horrible sounding call. But I put a lot of time into it, so this is the cost of it, right? And some of them would, and some of them wouldn't bite on it. Josh picked up an African black. I will never forget this as long as I live. It was an African blackwood, which is one of my favorite woods to work with because it's so solid. And it just comes out in ribbons when you turn it. I love African blackwood, and it's hard, and it's got a good, Josh, what's it called?
It's very dense. It's got a great tone.
It's got a great tone. I love it. And I got through with it, and it was flat, that kind of deal. And Josh just, I was like, I don't know what to do here. This is not working right. And because I'd had to do there while I turned the whole thing. So think about that. You got somebody there watching you while you're doing it. You bring it out. It sounds like crap. He literally looks at the tone board. Asked me for sandpaper. Shaves a little bit off, slides the reed in, and it sounds immaculate. And I grab it from it. I say, no, that's good. Leave it alone. And I'm looking at it right now. It's sticking up in the little pottery thing I've got over there. It sounded better than anything I'd ever done. I refuse to hunt with it because I don't consider it mine. But after that, he walked out and has made a dynasty is not the right word. I don't know what the right word is. It's just like, and I look at every post he makes, and I'm like, I'm so happy for Josh because Josh tells everybody he got this from somebody else and everything. And it's like I told y'all in the pre-deal. There's inspiration and there's dedication, and the two never meet. Josh is dedicated. And you want a world-class call, Josh is the one to go to, period. End of discussion. And I'm happy to have had, on a cellular level, a little bit of a part of it. Because it's a big deal.
Thank you. It set the foundation. I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, except thank you. when it boils down to it, here's the deal. When it really comes down to it, and I don't know, I feel like this is kind of where I'm at right now, kind of in life. You go through phases or whatever, and I've had my phases of doing this hobby and that hobby, and I feel like that right now, and I may say something in 10 years, 5, 10, 20 years different, but I feel like somehow at you know, in my late 30s that I finally found maybe what my purpose for life was, you know, because I've always heard when you enjoy what you do, you never work in a day in your life, that whole statement. Never really understood it because work was work, and even if you love it, work is still work some days. But, you know, I mean, I get to come out in a shop every day, and I mean, I just love it. I absolutely love it. It never gets old. It hadn't gotten old in 6 years now. And, I don't know, man. It's when you find that one thing in life that you love to do, and if you're fortunate enough to, you know, support your family by it, it's a pretty special thing. And to know where it all originated from is, you know, even more special.
Well, we're going to go way more in depth with that story in the next few weeks, because we are picking up the Reggio story here on the podcast. We've kind of held it back. People have asked about it, and we're going to tell that story, Josh's story, and I think it's going to be really good. And that's glad we didn't jump off into great detail about it, but we will really, really go into detail about it in a few weeks from now.
Yeah, I'm excited to tell it. It's got ebbs and flows and ups and downs, but I'm excited about it.
So, Josh, you never did pick up on the decoy carving?
Yes and no. I have. I've ordered all the cork, and I've got the paint and the sealer, and I've had it all here for actually a couple of years. And, you know, fortunately, I don't have time. I'm having to stand in front of that lathe every day. It's on my list.
I didn't mean it in that sense. I'm just saying that you're so good with wood and working with wood that I just figured it'd be something else that you would attempt.
Again, man, it's literally, you know, so it's the next part of the process. I actually had a dog that was trained by Bill Autry also, I got to hunt with moose, to go back to the first part of the story. Jason Zara was my roommate for a year back when Justin, you know, he was actually traveling back and forth from Hattiesburg. Jason was, and
yep.
His wife was a doctor on the coast. He was a doctor at UMC. They had a house in Hattiesburg. I mean, I don't know how the guy did it, but, you know, I was guiding duck hunts for a couple of years during college. You know, when we came home, and Jason basically said, "Hey, would you please take moose and just work his tail off?" And so I actually got to hunt with moose for two seasons, and that dog was something special. And
autopilot.
And so I knew, yeah. So I knew if I ever got a dog, that it was good. I wanted one as close to moose as possible, which is you just can't get a moose. But so I had a half brother to moose, and let Bill train him for a short time, what I could afford at that, you know, that time. And you know, so the moose was a big part of a lot of our lives. You know, the dog that he was, I mean, he was, God, he was so special. I totally forgot the question. What did you ask me, Rocky? I can't remember why I was talking about moose. Oh, Jason. So Jason was my roommate, you know, and that was during the whole competition. Jason won the Mississippi State once or twice at least, during that time frame also. And so, you know, I knew, you know, if I ever got a dog, I wanted one as close to moose as possible. So I had, you know, Brody, and he's passed away a couple of years ago now. He died when he was 12, but you know, he was a good hunter. He was more of a meat dog. And then, you know, I've made the, you know, a duck call. I've killed ducks with a call that I made. And so kind of the next part of that is the decoys. And I don't, actually, Ramsey and I have had that discussion a lot. Ramsey came over to shop, and I kind of showed him what I had, and I just got to do it, and I just haven't done it yet. It pisses me off that I haven't done it, but I haven't. But I will one day.
Hey, before we leave this podcast, hey, Justin,
Yeah.
Tell everybody the story of your wife running up behind Ramsey a few months back because he was riding his bike. Or was it your wife telling me that story? Was that you or your wife telling me the story?
No, I don't think it was
Rocky,
me.
Why are you talking to Justin's wife?
At the party. At the book release. Somehow Ramsey Russell came up in the conversation, and I've actually, so what I'm about to tell you is something that I've already talked to Ramsey about.
Yes. Well, you know more than I do.
So about the time of the book release, she gets behind Ramsey, which Ramsey talks extensively about on the podcast, is his love of riding bikes.
Yeah.
Well, Ramsey's not just a regular guy when it comes to riding a bike. I say he's not a regular guy when it comes to riding a bike. He's not a regular guy when it comes to communication when riding a bike. So Ramsey has to take his phone everywhere he goes, right? Because he's always getting phone calls about duck hunts. Well, of course Ramsey's not going to stick some Bluetooth, headphones in as he rides his bike. Ramsey wears a visor, and he sticks the phone through the hat. So he's riding with this big box phone on the side of his head. So anyway, I kind of knew a little backstory to that, and your wife said, man, I got behind Ramsey the other day. He was biking. I couldn't figure out what in the world was on his head, and it was his big iPhone 8 Plus. Up under the band of his hat, down to his ear.
I don't know the whole story behind that, but I can tell you, he lives like 200 yards from me or something like that as crow flies. So I'm surprised she didn't run him off the road. Honestly.
I'm like, Ramsey, buy a pair of headphones and listen to podcasts or the radio while you're biking. Nope. I'm going to listen to it through my phone.
Yep. I mean, I can't believe she didn't run him off the road.
Your wife telling this is hilarious.
Well,
let me tell you something. What kind of box? He had this huge black box on the side of his head.
Megan Harrison is one of the funniest humans on the face of the planet. And if Ramsey survived that little ordeal, more power to him.
Oh, guys, great podcast. I really appreciate y'all because it's late at night. It's almost 10 o'clock for those of you that are listening to this. 10 o'clock on Thursday night that we could all get together, find the time and get together because Justin was at the dojo.
Do a karate.
y'all are awful. Awful.
Oh, I have really enjoyed it, Josh. Thank you for being here. Justin, as always, thank you for being here. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com, MSDuckSouth.com.